It's so nice to be back with you. And it's great to see that looks like the bulk of people are now coming back into the sanctuary. So maybe I'll have to join you there the next time I'm here. And it's been a while since I've been here. I've been ill, and so I've had to let go of quite a bit of what I've been doing in the world. But I'm feeling better and stronger, and I'm really happy to be back. And thank you for inviting me to come and talk about wise caregiving today, because this is something that's really close to my heart. So what I'd like to do today is just have a few minutes to speak briefly about what wise caregiving is. And then I'd actually like to offer you some of the sort of curriculum, the training, the teaching that we do, so you can get a real sense of what we do in the world as contemplative care trainers. So if that's okay, I'll dive in with that. Okay. So I have been working as a chaplain in hospital and cancer care and hospice. And in 2016, I noticed I was starting to get a little burned out. Well, a lot burned out, actually. And I did a sort of back of the envelope figure, and I figured I'd been at about 1,400 deaths. And I thought, okay, now it's time for me to step back from that. And I don't want to step away with all this knowledge that has been imparted to me by my patients and my teachers. I wanted to pass that along to others. So I founded Wise Caregiving as a way to do that. And what Wise Caregiving does is we go into the communities of care providers, whether those are professionals or family care providers, or even people who are caring for the world in ways we don't usually think of as care providing, activists, attorneys, people who go and put their hands on things. And what we want to do is help those people find a way not to do what happened to me, which was burn myself out. How can they do a more sustainable kind of care that allows them to give their best in an effective way and gives them joy while they do it? So we go and we offer these trainings out in the world, and we don't teach people the hard skills of caring for people. We don't teach people how to, you know, change beds or how to administer IVs. There's lots of other training for that in the technologies that we have for hands-on. What we do instead is we offer contemplative technology. That human technology that we have built up over centuries, over millennia, of how to be open-hearted and present, how to listen, how to console, how to support, and how to do that in a way that's mutually supportive. So it's not just a caregiver exhausting themselves for another, but it's actually a reciprocal relationship that benefits both the caregiver and the care receiver. And we do offer a curriculum around this, and I wanted to mention that we do have a class that's starting, registration starts tomorrow, and it's an 8-week course in which we dive quite deeply into the kind of curriculum that we offer. So usually what we find is that people divide into binaries. People say, I'm this and you're that. But our training is always about connecting, about taking away the boundaries so that we see more fully and deeply. So this course that we'll be offering is called the 8 Caregiving Foundations. And it's 8 different examples of ways to break apart those things that separate us and instead turn them into things that connect us. So for instance, some of those are self and other. How do we bridge the boundary between self and other? So I don't see myself as over here and you over there, but it's us together. How can we see, for instance, giving and receiving, not as two things, but as one thing? How can I receive as I'm giving, and how can you give as you're receiving? How can we deal with being well and unwell at the same time? How can we be with life and death that's constantly regenerating? So this is examples of some of the things that we go in really deeply with our curriculum to give people the ability to care effectively. And then today, I was told that you collect your donations to support the charity that's coming. So I'm so happy for that, and thank you. And one of the things that we want to work on at Wise Caregiving is to begin to create on-demand video modules that people can use when they have 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, instead of waiting for us to offer a big course. And that takes money to do, to create that. So that's one of the things that we'd like to use your donations for, is to help us create that kind of easily accessible training for people. So when mom is taking a nap and you have 15 minutes, you can go for support and turn that into something that's concrete in the way you care for your mom. But today, what I want to talk about, I want to show you some of this curriculum so you get a sense of what this actually is. And so I want to talk about the fundamental skill of listening. And this is an absolutely foundational skill if we want to offer care in the world. If we're going to do care that's effective, we first have to listen, because if we don't listen, we're just operating on our idea about what that person needs, or our idea about who that person is. We have to actually hear so that we can deliver care that's effective and skillful. My teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, used to always say that love and understanding are the same thing. That if you deeply understand something, you love that thing. And you can't say that you love something that you don't deeply understand. And so that's why I want to talk about listening today, because it's so foundational for us to do any sort of caring in the world at all. How do we do that? Well, we start by what I call clearing our listening space. Clearing the listening space. And the listening space is that internal openness and clarity that makes listening possible. And we don't often think about that because our listening space is usually filled. Our listening space is usually filled with the momentum of all of our ideas and our plans and our opinions and our thoughts. We don't have any space in which to hear the other person. It's sort of like if we took a glass of an empty glass and we dipped it into a ditch and we pulled up some muddy water. It would seem like that water is just opaque and doesn't have much inspiration to offer us or nutrition to offer us. But if we put the glass down and we let it settle out, soon that water will be clear, and the mud and the things that were occluding the water have settled to the bottom, and we can see clearly now. That's what it's like to open up our listening space. It's like letting the mud in us settle out. What prevents us from having an open listening space is our momentum. We are busy people. We live in a busy culture. And I like to think of momentum as like the oil trains that travel down next to Highway 20 from the refinery. You might have seen these oil trains. They're more than 100 cars long. And I did a little bit of research, and I discovered that a fully loaded 100-car oil train weighs 30 million pounds. That's a lot of momentum. How do you start and stop a train that weighs 30 million pounds? Especially if you're this little engineer in the locomotive, how do you do that? Because that's kind of what we are with our momentum. We're like that little engineer. It's really hard to slow down all our momentum. So we have to really be conscious about that. Coming to this service is one way that we slow our momentum. You might have experienced that on your way to the service. You might have been thinking about all the things you need to do. You might have been rushing to make sure you get here on time. You might have been rushing to finish up cleaning the kitchen before you got out to the car, and you drove a little faster than you needed to. That's momentum. So walking in the door of the service gave you an opportunity to go, oh, and you slowed your momentum. And when you did that, you made it possible for you to hear each other, for you to listen to what was offered, for you to be present for the people in this congregation that you care about, without slowing the momentum you might have just shooed right by, not seen them, not heard them. So I've developed for myself a whole series of practices that help me slow my momentum. And I'll just name a few of them for you, not to say that this is how you ought to do it, but might maybe give you some ideas for how you might slow momentum in the middle of your everyday life. One of the most beautiful ones that's grown very deep for me is simply returning to a single conscious breath. So I might find myself outside the door of a patient, and I'm unsure what's going to be on the other side of that door. So maybe my anxiety is a little bit high, and I want to get through that door so I can figure out what's going to happen, and I can solve this, and I can feel less anxious. But I realize that if I'm going to hope to do anything like that, first I need to pause outside that door and take one breath in and one breath out. Right away, I've stopped my momentum. Right away. You might try that right now, right where you're sitting. Take a single breath in and out. Can you feel how that slows your body? Another thing that I do is the practice of smiling, just like we heard this morning in our joys. The practice of smiling. If I can stop and remember to smile, I don't have to feel happy first. I can smile and my body can then feel happy. You might try that. Smile and feel the slowing of your momentum. So I encourage you, whether it's finding time when you're enjoying the warm water while you're washing the dishes, feel your hands in the warm water, that might be the time to slow your momentum. Maybe it's that moment right before you put your key into the car ignition, you take a moment to slow your momentum so that when you drive, you don't rush. Whatever works for you, you might just enjoy experimenting with it. That's the first step to listening, is slowing our momentum. But I think it begs the question to us, well, why should we even listen? Isn't listening kind of inconvenient after all? I mean, we already know what we know. We already know what you need. Why don't I just get right to delivering it? Why don't I just get on with it? And I think the reason that we need to listen is because in order to respond appropriately, we have to listen carefully. It might be inconvenient for us to listen, but it's vital. It's vital. And I want to mention three different ways that you could listen. Three different ways. And this is going to be using our head, our heart, and our bodies. Those are the three ways, and I want to talk a little bit about each one of them. I'm going to start with the head. So listening with the head is the kind of listening that we're used to doing most often. What we're listening for is the story. What's going on for you? What happened? We're listening for the facts. We want to know the truth of the facts. You have to tell us. We have to read the chart. We have to talk to the other people around you. Get the facts in our heads. This is what we usually think of as listening, kind of listening with our ears, processing it through our brains. And to do that, we really have to cultivate a sense of attention and clarity. You know, in order to hear with our head, we have to be open and hear with all our skillfulness, all our intelligence. But if we just listen with our head, there's some pitfalls that we can fall into. You know, one of them is that we get the idea that we really know what's going on, that we're pretty certain about this. Oh, I've got this figured out. And I learned in hospice that every time I thought I had it figured out, I was at best partially correct and often completely wrong. So I have to be really careful that I don't get this sort of idea that, oh, I've heard with my head, now I'm certain that I've got it. I'm certain I understand. Another thing I have to worry about when I listen with just my head is judgment. Because you might be doing or saying things that I don't think are very wise. So I can get stuck in, well, if you just do it my way, this problem would go away. I know what's better for you. Just do what I tell you. And how many of you would ever welcome someone to come in and say that to you? Probably none of you. Right? That's one of the least effective ways of helping, is to walk in and say, oh, I've got this figured out. Just do this. And it's all going to be better. Nobody wants that. That's not effective listening at all. So that's with the head. We use our head. It's a wonderful human skill that we have. I don't want to for a second say, let's get rid of our head, but let's use it wisely. Let's make sure that we don't get so certain that we know the answer that we end up imposing more suffering on someone instead of help alleviate their suffering. So if we're already listening with our head, let's expand that now. Let's start to listen with our heart. And our heart is where we sense the feelings that are happening. Because a person is more than their story. They're more than the facts. They are their feelings. And so in order to do that, we have to develop a kind of empathy. And luckily, we're all wired to have empathy. We feel with people. We experience people's physical and emotional states right along with them. We have these mirror neurons in us. It's built into us. You might try that sometime. When you're engaged in conversation with someone, begin to notice whether you're actually starting to feel what it is that they're feeling. If there's anxiety present in you, you might begin to wonder, ooh, is this my anxiety? Or am I mirroring this person's anxiety? And that gives me some really good information about how to care for them. But there are some pitfalls to doing this. So we can easily become entangled in another person's emotions. If they are deeply saddened and deeply troubled, we might find ourselves swept away and carried away by their emotional state. Or the opposite. If their suffering is so deep, we might find ourselves distancing ourselves from them. Say, no, I just can't go there. It's too much. I've got to turn away. So we balance our feeling, listening with our heart, with our head, so that we have a more full picture and we don't get swept away by their feelings, or we don't judge and distance ourselves from their feelings. So the last center I want to talk about is our body center. And it's a lot like our heart center in that we use our own bodies. We use our own bodies as a tool for listening. I'd like to invite you to do something afterwards. If you're in the sanctuary, afterwards when you're enjoying coffee and cookies with someone and you're having a close conversation where you feel like you're really connecting, notice the two of you and your body stances. You may well be mirroring the person you're talking with in the very stance that they're standing in. If you've got your hand resting on the counter and your hips thrown out to the side a little bit, they may well exactly do the same thing. You are now listening with your bodies at almost a subliminal level. And once you start to do that, you can look to your own body for a lot of information about what the other person is experiencing, because you're experiencing it too. So in order to do that, we really have to develop our sense of presence with another person, our sense of intuition with that other person, so that our body is able to mirror. And the things that we could be avoiding here or watching out for is if we get overwhelmed again by what they're experiencing, you know, they could be in such physical pain that we might take that on ourselves. And that can be really hard. Or we might just be plain wrong about what we're mirroring. It might not be them at all. It might be our own anxiety, our own fear that we're offering to them. So we can't always assume that when we're feeling something, it's coming from the other person. So oftentimes when we listen, that's all we actually need to do. We think that giving care to someone means that we do this task or that task. But being heard is often the most powerful medicine that we could offer anyone. So if we can actually show up with a friend that's hurting, sit down with them and listen with our whole self, with our head to the story, with our heart to the feelings, with our body to the mirroring, and they know that they're being heard in this way, just that may be enough for them to find themselves and move forward with their difficulty. You might not have to do anything else at all. I wonder if this is not behind, for instance, the Catholic tradition of confession. Someone hears what's troubling you on your heart. You go into that booth and you speak what's on your heart. Someone hears it and you feel unburdened. In Buddhism, we have bodhisattvas, which are these entities that are personifications of human qualities. And one of them, Avalokiteshvara, is the bodhisattva of deep listening. And Avalokiteshvara solves the world's problems simply by hearing them. No judgment, no solutions, just listening. Do you remember a time when you've been heard that way? When someone heard you so deeply that you felt completely seen? And if you did, what was your response? I know for me, that is something that I've longed for in my life. This didn't occur for me growing up. I didn't feel heard in this way. And I think it's one of the reasons why I've developed this into a practice, because I know the pain of that. But there have been people who have heard me. There are people who hear me, and it is so wonderful. I feel like when someone hears me, they give me the gift of me figuring out how to solve my own problems. They don't step in and try and replace my own maturity, my own agency with their solutions. They hear me and they help me see my own way through. And I hope you've had that experience of being listened to in that way, because it's a powerful incentive for you to be able to go and offer listening to other people from that very experience. You know in yourself how healing and empowering that was. And so you would like to walk in to the next interaction that you have and offer that to someone else. Imagine the world we'd live in if we, instead of yelling at each other, we listened to each other. Instead of me coming to set you straight, I came to hear you. Wow. Wouldn't that be amazing? So I'll close with a quote by Rachel Remen, who is a physician who does wonderful work in this area of contemplative care. And she wrote a couple of really, really lovely books. This is from Rachel Remen. "I have learned to respond to someone crying by just listening. In the old days, I used to reach for the tissues until I realized that passing a person a tissue may be just another way to shut them down, to take them out of their experience of sadness and grief. Now, I just listen. When they've cried all they need to cry, they find me there with them. This simple thing has not been easy to learn. It certainly went against everything I'd been taught since I was very young. I thought people listened only because they were too timid to speak or did not know the answer. A loving silence often has far more power to heal and to connect than the most well-intentioned words." So thank you all for giving me the gift of listening. I really feel your open hearts. I feel your receptivity, and that pulls forth in me my best. And so thank you for allowing my best to come out and being and modeling this skill of deep listening. Thank you. And I don't know if we have time for questions, but I can answer questions after the service if that's a better timing. So just let me know about that.
I think we do actually have a couple minutes. We can probably do about 5 minutes.
Wonderful.
I'll start with the sanctuary if anybody has any questions that they'd like to ask.
Or comments, doesn't have to be a question.
I assume that this class you're offering starting tomorrow is Zoom.
That is correct. Yeah, and you can learn about it more by going to radiantlightzen.org, and Wise Caregiving is part of Radiant Light Zen. So you go to the Wise Caregiving tab, and it shows the class there.